Well, hello there. I'm back after a little break from the podcast. If this is the first episode you're listening to, I'm giving you a warm welcome, and for my returning listeners, a warm virtual hug for you too. Life has really caught up on me, but I'm so pleased to announce that this is the 20th episode so far. Yay! To honour it, I thought it would be fitting to invite my friend Nimra Zaman, who is not only wife of the content creator Ahmed Zaman, but is a project manager by day and a fully blown Asian bridal model and content creator by night. Nimra has featured in several modeling shoots around the country, and today we are both going to shine light on what it's like being a British Asian Muslim woman working in the UK modeling industry. This is going to be a good one. So whether you're driving the long commute to or back from work, snuggled on the sofa, or just relaxing in a steamy bath, make sure to just turn the volume up ever so slightly and enjoy. Hi, Nimra.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm glad that I finally got you to myself, because I know you're such a busy person. And I know if Ahmed was on here, we wouldn't get a word in edgeways. So I'm pretty happy about this conversation.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
No, I was really happy to kind of get a moment of your time, because I think we spoke about having this conversation, I think it was months ago now, at a meal at Upfers, I think, in Sheffield. And it was after you'd come to one of my dance classes, and it just came to mind that you have been working in the UK modelling industry, specifically in the Asian bridal industry, for quite a while now. And I was so intrigued to know your experience in the industry and like how it's been so far for you, because, you know, mashallah, you've excelled so much. You've gone from like 0 to 100, and I've like gone to a makeup artist, and I've just kind of like worked alongside them for Bollywood, and they're like, oh yeah, no, there's the models like Nimra. I'm like, you know, you've become a well-known name, so I'm so proud of you, and I just can't wait to just kind of have this conversation with you.
Definitely, thank you so much for those kind words, thanks.
No worries. So I wanted to start really with where you've moved from. So you were originally from Luton, is that correct?
Yeah,
so you were probably in the London arena quite a bit, and then I think, from what I understand, that's kind of where your modeling career started to bud. So let's start there. Like, what, first off, what made you go into modeling, and how did you progress with it in the South?
I think it was a bit of a hobby that I wanted to do something about. It was just kind of like, oh, I want to something different from my 9-to-5 office job, and it'll be kind of fun to do. I mean, as a kid, like, especially as a girl, we all see those models, or we see those people wear these fancy clothes, walk on catwalks. So we all want to kind of do that. And I guess I got the opportunity quite early on, where I knew people who were makeup artists or were in that industry, who kind of like, oh, would you be interested? And I guess that's where it kind of grew out from.
Oh, nice. And so, like, how did you come into network with people who were makeup artists and who were in the industry?
I think just from kind of like school, or they were siblings or relatives of people that I knew.
Oh, nice. And did it start off with you just kind of going to someone's house and like getting your makeup done, or
I remember the first one was kind of like, yeah, I got my makeup done by somebody, and then someone said, oh, would you be interested in modeling for me one time? And I was like, oh, okay, I don't know what that kind of means, but all right, I mean, you know, I'll give it a go.
Yeah.
So it was just kind of like small things like that, or like where people would just be like, oh, I just want to kind of try things out, you know, do something a bit different. And of course, like, makeup was so different back then anyway. There wasn't that many makeup artists, so they wanted to try different techniques out. And yeah, it was a experience in itself as well.
And I guess you were kind of used as a guinea pig.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. So when did the move to, let's say, you going into London and perhaps experimenting a little bit in the modeling scene, how was that for you? How did that all start for you?
So I think professionally, I think it was quite difficult. I mean, the ones that I did freelance were with people I knew or people who were mutual kind of friends, or we had links. So it wasn't that bad. You know, they kind of had the understanding that, oh, there may be certain restrictions. But I think professionally, so in London, there was an event on and I wanted to do it. And there was some clothes that they wanted me to wear. And I felt uncomfortable wearing them. And I mean, it was on a catwalk. And I thought, yes, this is great. Like, you know, professionally, I can be on a catwalk. But the outfits that they had weren't something that I would be comfortable in. They're saying to me specifically that, oh, well, you're not going to get any jobs if you're not going to wear clothes like this. And I was kind of like, oh, okay. Well, then I guess I'm going to park this to the side then. Because
yeah,
if I'm not comfortable, I mean, it's each to their own. You do it in however you feel comfortable. And I wasn't kind of comfortable in that. And I guess I was just like, okay, well, I guess this is no, I guess this is kind of stop for me. And I think that put me off then doing anything else.
Yeah. So would you say that was like your first obstacle within the modeling scene?
Yeah,
so I guess, yeah, I think it varies for everybody in what they choose to do and what they don't choose to do. And I think you potentially being from a Muslim background, also being an Asian woman, you have a certain set of principles and morals that you'd like to abide by. And I think that I completely resonate with that, because when I had a very, very tiny modeling career in London, I was with an agency and I had to wear this massive avant-garde type dress, and they sewed this headset to my head. And at the time I was 22 and oblivious, but it was a cat. Yeah, and it was crazy, but like, and it was at the Freemason Hall, I remember, in Hoban. And it was a runway. I was a runway model, and I was kind of walking down the runway, and there's lots of different amazing companies there that, you know, like Tony and Guy and so many different other ones as well. And it was incredible. But I remember feeling distinctly uncomfortable, because there was a moment where they took off the dress and I was kind of just stripped down in my bra and underwear. But, and I was in a cubicle, but there were men walking past. And also, I didn't know the women that I was with, but I wasn't expecting them to just take it off there and then. I was expecting to have a bit of a briefing that, look, this is what's going to happen. But they actually treated me like a human mannequin. And I think that's what models in the industry tend to be sometimes, like a human mannequins. They treat you like that, especially in such a busy environment. But coming from the background that I did, that was when I started to realize, at the age of 22, okay, this is what I'm okay with. This is what I'm not okay with. You know, and that's when things started to become more clearer for me. So I think with your first instance, it was kind of similar, wasn't it, in terms of the outfits?
Yeah. Definitely. Like, I have somewhat of a similar story to what you said, but I can mention that later on. But yeah, definitely. I feel like it is kind of like you're a human mannequin. And I feel like when you're at a young age, it's not nice when it's kind of like you're taking advantage of. Like, I mean, they're not briefing you. It's not very professional. It's kind of like, this is your job and that's it, that you're just kind of expected to do all these things. It's not kind of like they talk to you and say, this is the process we follow, because everybody is different. And I'm sure that not everyone in the industry follows that same rule. I'm sure there is some sort of procedure that they follow, or some sort of, you know, briefing that they do with all their models. But I feel like when you're younger, they kind of just be like, just do what they need to, because they're not going to say no, because they want to get into the, they'll do what it needs to happen. And I think that's where a lot of people kind of fall back on. And I think that's where I kind of fell back on, because I was so excited and I went backstage and I was like, yes, I'm ready. You know, I want to do this. And then when it, like, I had such high expectations, and when they were like, these are the outfits, I was like, oh, like, you know, like, yeah, there was no being as to, you know, this is possibly where, or, you know, is there an option, or, you know, something. It was just kind of like, this is what you're given and that's it. And I was just like, oh, hey.
Yeah, know? No, I can understand that. That must have kind of given you a bit of a setback. And I'm sure you were so excited, you were so young, you were so ready to embrace this new hobby that you had besides your 9-to-5 job. And now you've kind of reached this major obstacle. So what happened then after that? So did you stop modeling for a little bit, or did something else happen?
Yeah, so I stopped modeling after that. And then I was kind of like, okay, I think that really put me off, because I was like, of course, like, when you're doing something and you have a hobby of it, like, in any mindset, you're kind of like, oh, I want to go professional, I want to do more in this. Like, what's the kind of end goal of it? And I guess that put me off, because I was like, well, then if this is what's the end goal, and this is people who are professional doing this, then nobody else is gonna kind of respect that same moral that I have. So I was kind of like, okay, forget it.
Yeah.
But saying that, I think when I got married, I think Emma pushed me and motivated me to kind of be like, if you really want to do it and you have a passion for it, go ahead. And if they like you, they will, you know, have you again. And if they don't, then that's fine. And I think that support really helped me a lot to kind of get back into modeling.
Yeah. So when did you start modeling?
What, initially or when I got married?
No, as in like the year that you started modeling initially.
I think I was like 17, 18, because I remember being in college. I remember being in college and I went with my friend, and I remember my friend going to one as well. And then I remember I got ready for a makeup artist, and that's when I got asked. So I think I was probably 17, 18.
So the reason why I'm asking now is because I've noticed a massive shift just being on social media and watching the reels, a massive shift in the modeling industry and in the makeup industry, and how things, the aesthetics have changed, the topics have changed. And I've noticed that fashion, in inverted commas, was more westernized back in the day. And it wasn't necessarily representative of everybody, of every scene, of every audience, of every cultural background and religion. Religion being an operative word here. So it's one of those things where I've noticed that I think that has now evolved a little bit. And I hope, correct me if I'm wrong, that this has helped your modeling career as well. So I don't know how it was in London, but you know, when you moved up to Leeds, what was the modeling scene like for you in the north?
No, I definitely agree. It definitely has changed. I think to start off with, it was kind of like modeling, dancing, acting, all those kind of careers, they were all very frowned upon. Of course, still there are some people who still kind of frown upon it, but I think it's more socially acceptable, where they're kind of like, it is a career, it's more than just what you see on social media, or whatever it's portrayed on the media. It is more to that, people are working hard, it is a job, there's so much more that they plan for it and do. And up north, I feel like they were more kind of respecting of the morals that I have, and of course of the religion. So if I wanted to dress more modestly, or if there's certain things I didn't want to do, like kind of like, you know, if I didn't want to work with other male models, they'd kind of respect that a bit more. And I think up north, the culture is very different from what is down south.
Yeah, and that's really interesting, because you know, you use the word modest, and I found that sometimes, and I could be wrong, but from what I've seen, being modest was seen as almost unfashionable back in the day.
Yes.
So there wasn't a lot of modest focused fashion, and if there was modest focused fashion, they'd focus on designing an abaya or something like that. And I think there is this stigma behind modeling. Well, there isn't anymore, I don't think, but I think there used to be back in the day, that if you want to be a model in the Asian community, then you're going to have to show your body. And it was seen as not exactly the most, in inverted commas, respectable profession according to our South Asian society, especially the, I'd say, the Muslim Asian society. And so other professions as well, which is crazy to me, like air host, being an air hostess, and acting and modeling, and you know what I do, dancing. And I think dancing is still seen, I'm still trying to fight that narrative, but it's still seen as something that's not entirely respectful. So it makes me happy to hear that when you moved to the north and you started your modeling career again, that they are more open to a modest setting.
Yeah, definitely. And again, it's kind of what it was portrayed as, like you said, it was very westernized, so everybody was kind of like, oh well, you're going to be a model, you're going to be showing all your body. But it's like, actually no, the north changed that a little bit. I mean, down south have got that, where there is a lot more people who are doing a lot more modest stuff, but I feel like up north there is a bigger community, there is more people who are connected to their roots, kind of like, you know, kind of more stuck to the morals that they have because of the big community that they have around them. So they want to show more modest clothing. They want to, of course, cater to the audience that they have. So they have to kind of be respectful of that. And I think that's really nice that they're doing that, because now more young people want to get involved, and it's not the kind of whole thing of modeling isn't portrayed as bad as it was. It's kind of like, yeah, you can still be a model and do what you want to. I mean, if you want to show your skin, you can, but also you can dress modestly, you can wear a scarf, but not wear a scarf. You know, I think back then there was no in between. Back then it was either you wear a hijab or you don't wear a hijab. And
exactly. And also, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, just to be the devil's advocate, I feel like potentially in environments like London particular and in other areas of the South, there is this coat of peer pressure, you know, a case of, oh, I mean, you'll know more about this than I do, but it's a case of, oh, well, they're doing it, so why can't you do it? You know, it's a case of everyone is not seen as an individual, but it's more seen as, well, this is a expectation from the company, or this is an expectation from what we want, our criteria. So if you want to be a part of it, you have to fit in the criteria, or you just, they send you packing. Whereas in the North, I've not really done any modding in the North, but I'm sure you will know, or, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm sure you get a bit more of a say when you're on set about what you want and what you don't want.
Yeah, and I also think it's the power of the community that you have. I think it, because you know there is more of the community here, you know you can say that because there is a wider audience here, whereas down south, there is people who want to be more modest, but they feel like because there's not that much of a community there, they're going to be kind of out, you know, kind of the odd one out, basically, because they don't fit in anywhere. So I feel like that's why there is more pressure down south than there is up north.
Yeah, I think I remember you telling me about some of the reputable brands in London that you wanted to work with, and how, you know, some of the requirements were way out of your morals. So just kind of enlighten us a little bit about some of those stories.
Like the story that you were saying about the catwalk. So I wanted to, of course, go professional, and I was just like, yeah, I'm excited for it. And straight away, I got offered this job where they were like, yeah, you can walk on the catwalk. And it was a really profitable brand, and I was like, great. But then they were kind of like, yeah, the only way you can do it, these are requirements that, you know, there'll be male people touching you, you'll have to get changed in front of everyone. And I get the industry. I know that it's very fast paced, that, you know, doing catwalks and stuff. I get it completely. But you can't just kind of be like, well, we require you to change in front of other men and other men are going to touch. Like, come on, like, you can't do that. You need to kind of respect people's, you know, personal space and what they feel comfortable with. And I just think it's just open to so many other negative impacts. Like, you know, there could be so much sexual harassment. There could be,
exactly,
you know, other
yeah.
necessary things that can happen. And, you know, you can't kind of just put those requirements on someone. I feel like they should have been a proper briefing. And I just got that sent on an email and they were like, this is what we expect you to do. And I was just like, okay, well, you know, thanks. Like, before we've even professionally worked, or we haven't had a conversation, it's kind of like, this is what you're expected to do. And that's it. It was kind of like, that's the final word. And then because of that, I kind of, again, was like, okay, I don't want to do it. But that, I think the only difference between back then to now is, even though, again, I've kind of put my, even though I had high expectations and it kind of got put down again, I feel like because of the community that there is up north, I've continued to do modeling because I know that there's other makeup artists, clothing brands and other companies up north that still will respect the morals that I have and still will respect the requirements that I have and still want to work with me. So that still has made me motivated to continue on. Otherwise, I feel like maybe if I was down south, there would be a little bit of hesitance again for me to be like, well, there's not much of a community here for me to kind of rely on to understand where I'm coming from in my requirements. I'm not trying to be fussy or, you know, be a diva. I just have
of course,
because of where I stand.
Of course, of course. And I think from what I can understand of the modelling industry, particularly in London, is there is a heavy Bollywood influence. So a lot of the Bollywood actresses, they were initially models, like, for example, Deepika Padukone, who then became a Bollywood actress. And I think that kind of culture definitely trickles down into the London Asian modelling industry. So I think, because of the environment being so fast paced, and, you know, because we're normally, when actors and actresses are on set, they're getting makeup done within 10 minutes between sets and things like that, the culture is the same in the industry in London. And I think what people fail to understand is, this could also work for males as well, but I can only speak as a female, is that women carry different types of trauma with them. And so what I see is that if you want to be a model, One, you've got to look the part. That's a whole process in itself. And that's a whole pressure in itself, keeping a certain weight, making sure you're taking care of your skin, making sure your hair is long so they can experiment with it. You're very limited and shackled as to what you can do with your appearance. So that's one thing that they're probably battling with already. Then the second thing is then having to deal with the fast-paced environment, but also not being sure where the lines are being blurred, because people can say, oh, it's part of the process, but you might have felt that somebody's touched you inappropriately or said something inappropriate. But because it's part of the process, in inverted commas, and it's part of the industry, it's almost as if some women, I could say, could potentially get taken advantage of. And where do you really draw the line there? And I think that is a major problem that needs looking at in this modern day society.
Yes, 100%. And I'm not saying that the process that they follow is completely wrong. Like, if that's how the industry works, then great. But I think it's about making that person feel comfortable and respecting their boundaries. And I think that's where, like you said, people get taken advantage of because nobody really asks them that is this okay, or is this, it's kind of just like expected from you. It's kind of like this is a job and that's it. It's kind of like they think, oh, it's that a 9-to-5 job, but actually, even in a 9-to-5 job, they still make sure, you know, are we working safe at home? Are we working safe in our environments? And I don't think they follow that procedure in the modeling industry, or actually all entertainment industry. I don't feel like they kind of think of it as they don't put it as high priority as you think that they would. They kind of just be like, this is your job and you're in and out and that is it.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think there is an emphasis on the moving mannequin here, isn't there? Like, for example, if you're a celebrity, a lot of people don't perceive celebrities or models, even, or actors and actresses as normal human beings. Emphasis on the normal. They just think, oh, these are celebrities, these are people that are kind of there to entertain us. And so they extract the human part of things, and they forget that this person is a human being. They have a certain level of mental health that they need to maintain, and a certain level of well-being that they need to maintain. And I completely agree with you that, you know, it is a workspace. And in every other workspace, there is an emphasis, especially post-pandemic, about your mental health, about your well-being, about how you're feeling and what they can do to accommodate you. So I mean, I've not been in the industry for a while, but I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong, that that is heavily prevalent in the industry at all.
No, I don't think it is. I think it's kind of, it is very much come and do your job and that's it. I don't think there's many people. I've had a couple of people who have been respectful of it and, you know, being very professional and asked, but there is a lot of, or I try 100% that whenever I get a booking, I kind of say my requirements or say how I feel way in advance. And sometimes I end up sending them a long list, but just because I want to be clear on it, I don't, even if they don't ask, I want to be clear because I don't want to be in that position where I'm kind of like, oh, I have to do this now. And I think,
Of
like, even though
course.
it's hard as a model, I think I try to push that as much as I can, even if somebody, you know, doesn't ask me, just because you can get caught up in such a bad state. Like, you know, your own mental health, like you said, is so important. And I think if nobody else can respect that in the industry, then you have to try to kind of win your way in.
I feel like you need to start a little bit of a trend there, Nimra. You know, have a little criteria set. And you know what? I think it's efficient, because you're not going to be wasting their time, and they're not going to be wasting your time, because you're managing expectations, you're letting them know what you're okay with and what you're not okay with. And I think going forwards, that might be the way to do it. In a way, it's kind of like a CV, or it's kind of like a requirement that you're sending them before you work with them. And I think it's really efficient. It's something that I think is quite lacking in the modeling industry. So moving on slightly. So now that you're in the north, and now that you're modeling in the north, you're a very successful model in the north. What kind of challenges have you experienced?
So I still have a couple of people who still kind of either don't read that requirement list I have, and then I get caught up in situations. I do try to meet them halfway and be like, okay, cool, but let's change this around or let's do it a different way. But I think there is, I think also another thing which is a big part of this industry is women supporting women. I think we all have to support each other and not kind of be harsh on what we expect from each other. I feel like I know that there's a couple of times where I've been like, oh, well, I've already said that, you know, I've I don't want to wear these certain clothes. And they're like, yeah, but that's fine. If I could wear it, I would. And I'm like, okay, that's great for you. But if I'm not comfortable, like, you know, as especially as a British Muslim woman, like you would, you know, respect one another and kind of understand where they're coming from. Like, I mean, I'm married and I in my head, I was assumed that the people who are also married would respect that. But I don't think that's the case. They just, again, like you said, you are just the human, you are just the mannequin. And for them, it's kind of like, but why do you not want to do that? And I feel like that is one of the challenges that I've had, is just women respecting other women and supporting other women. I think in this industry, that's what we need to do. We need to of help course. Each other. And I think that's how we're going to make the move and make that transition between having people feel more comfortable and getting people more involved in the industry. And that's how we're going to change people's mindset in acting, dancing, in modeling, changing their mindsets as to what we actually need and what this job actually requires, and our religion as well, like how that kind of ties in with everything.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I find it astonishing, like, for example, if I'm working with another woman, and I do this with my dancing business, where when there are certain outfits that we have to wear or that we want to wear during a performance, and if one of my dancers came up to me and said, Shaz, I'm not comfortable wearing this, heck gonna say no, you have to wear it, because it's about you respecting that woman's body. You know, it's she herself doesn't feel comfortable. She doesn't have to explain to me why she doesn't feel comfortable. All she said, you know, it's kind of like that no means no mindset, which applies here as well. It doesn't always have to be about consent. It's about an area of how a woman feels about her own body and her own self. And so I just think it baffles me sometimes where there's still that pressure to do something when you're working in the modeling industry, even though you've made it perfectly clear that you're not comfortable. And one other thing that I want to touch a base on is, I previously did a podcast episode on the halal haram ratio. And I believe that in the UK, us British Asians, us British Muslims, we have, everyone has their own halal haram ratio. And I think, like, exactly. And I think that it's a very individualistic thing. Like, for example, if I was modeling, if I was dancing, there's perhaps certain clothes that I would wear that maybe you wouldn't wear, but then I wouldn't model lingerie, but maybe somebody else might model lingerie. So everyone's scale and everyone's do's and don'ts is very different, and that ties into the halal haram ratio. And I think that's very prevalent in the modeling, that's very prevalent in the modeling industry, because they just think that if this person does it and they're Muslim and they're Asian, then why can't this person do it? But they don't see it as an individual thing. Do you see what I'm trying to say?
100%, 100%, I definitely agree with that, because like you said, everyone has a ratio of things of what they want to do. And if they want to do that, then that's great for them. I mean, we're not all perfect and we all have our different lives. We do things how we want. And that kind of goes for everyone. They may be not just for modeling. There could be other things where they think is correct and we don't kind of align with that. And I think just getting that respect for those individuals, I think that's what we lack in. And I think as women, we need to all support each other to kind of get away from that. I mean, you know, if as women aren't going to support each other as British Muslim women in that industry, then who else is? Like, we got to all be in that same scale and respect what each other's requirements are or what our beliefs are.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And I think we've touched upon this before, but I just kind of want to shine light on it again. Have you experienced any discrimination being a British Asian Muslim woman in the modeling industry?
Not as much, really. I think I think it's been quite good that actually everyone's been a bit respectful, but I have seen some things. I think color is a big thing. Right. You know, like, I haven't experienced it myself, but I may have had it where somebody's made me look whiter than usual, but I think that is a big thing as well. Like, as in color is a big thing, where it's kind of like white is deemed as beautiful and being olive skin or being dark tone isn't. And I think we need to also step away from that. There is a lot of makeup artists who do respect that and who do want much more kind of colored or tanned skin, which is great. And I think we just have to change, like I said, like all of us British Muslim women, we have to work together, or just women in general work together to kind of mold the industry that we have now, because in the coming years it is going to change, and we want to change it for the younger generation that we have, because they are going to be the future of tomorrow. So we want to show that actually being the color skin you are, or having different, you know, features is fine. And I think that's what we have to kind of change and kind of normalize.
Yeah, for sure. And like, I saw this a lot when my cousins were getting married in Bangladesh, and when we went to the parlor, the models in the parlor that they had pictures of, their face, the color, like the color of the foundation that they were wearing, it didn't match their skin tone, and they looked like Bhutanese, they looked like ghosts. And I was just thinking, and like, they had so much makeup on, and there were stories in the newspaper. Oh my God, it's hilarious how husbands have actually sued their wives because they look nothing like they did on their wedding day. And I always thought makeup was meant to enhance, but they're completely changing the look of the person. And I used to always wonder when I was a kid, because there was a cream that was about called Fair and Lovely, and I'm sure you're aware of it as well. And my cousins used to put loads of it on, and then I'd ask my auntie, I was like, oh, do I need to do this as well? Because I was, what, 13? And she said, no, because you're already fair. And I said, oh, so, and I associated from the age of 13 that being fair is what beauty is. And then it's not until I grew up and I, you know, looked at other people and I thought, oh my God, this woman's beautiful and this woman's beautiful, and they're not considered fair, they're a lovely skin color in their own right. And that's when I started to realize that we've been indoctrinated as a society, especially in the South Asian community, that fair is beautiful and being slightly darker is not. And I just think that's crazy. But yeah, going back to the point, when I was doing a little bit of modeling in Bradford when I was at university, I found in 2016 and 17 that being fair and that kind of makeup was still very practiced. But I find now in 2023 that it's heavily toned down. I could be wrong, but no, I think it's heavily toned down, and it's a lot more catered to the individual's skin color, which I think makes them look more beautiful, you know? I think the lashes are still endlessly long, but I think overall it's a lot more natural in inverted commas compared to what it was before.
100%, because obviously I am an olive tone skin color, and I know from when I did it from the beginning, obviously I was a young age, and I guess, like you said, when we kind of brought up in that community, fair is the beautiful. And when I did get, you know, makeup done and it was whiter, I just thought, yeah, I just look nice and that's it. But as you grow older, you kind of realize that actually, why am I trying to change my skin color, or why am I, like, you know, made to be in this certain way? Why do I have to try to be a different skin color? Why am I not happy in the skin color that I am? And you know, it makes you very conscious on who you are, especially if you're trying to get into the industry. Like you said, there's so much pressure as it is for your skin and your hair and everything else, let alone skin color, you know? So I think it is a change where people do like that color more. They're trying to show the emphasis more. I've seen so many other different, like, you know, I've seen makeup artists who use different ethnicities. I mean, you know, she doesn't even have to be South Asian. She can be, you know, from Africa or from a different ethnicity background. And they'll use that model just because they like her features. They love her skin color.
Yeah.
So it's nice that they're doing that. And I think that's what we need to show more on social media, or to the younger generation, that, you know, to make them feel more comfortable. And I think that's the only way that we can change what we have for tomorrow and make that change happen, like we have already, from changing it westernized to be more modest. I think we need to continue to do that so we can show the future of tomorrow, to kind of still go into the careers that we kind of want to pursue and we have the hobby of doing.
Exactly. And I think it's all great and wonderful, and I think we are heading in a positive direction, definitely, from going what we, you know, from what we saw as the, in inverted commas, ideal beauty, to more beauty in its own right, and being beauties in the eye of the beholder kind of thing. So would you say that social media in particular has helped the industry evolve?
Yes, definitely. I definitely, definitely. And I think we all can be consumed by social media in so many different ways. And I think as content creators or by business owners on social media, I think we all have a bit of a responsibility to kind of put out there, because what we show is what everyone sees and what everyone perceives in that industry or in the kind of role that you're in yourself. And I think that is so important to kind of know that you have that responsibility to share the truth on there and not just kind of, you know, make everything look pretty just for the sake of making things look pretty. I know I try to show things in real time. So I try to, even though I've got modeling pictures on there, I try to show pictures where I don't have no makeup or have less makeup on or just, you know, normal clothes. I know Emmett is constantly posting pictures that I don't like, but he's like, so it doesn't really matter. And I'm like, okay, like, you know, just so what? He's right. I shouldn't be so conscious about things. You know, me wearing glasses or me not having no makeup or me looking, you know, a scruff or whatever. Like, it's true. You need to kind of portray that out to other people to show that actually, even though I am a model, I have a normal life. You know, kind of going back to what you said is they forget that when, like, you know, I'm not saying that I'm a celebrity, but I think when you're an influencer or somebody on
you
social
kinda
media,
are though, you kinda are.
But like, I mean, like, when you're an influencer or something, I feel like they take out that human from you. They just think that is what you are and that's what we see of you. And I think we need to normalize being normal, you know, showing us being, yeah, okay, you have a modeling job or you are a dancer or you're an actor, but actually you work a normal job.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you look scruffy, you know, you can smell of curry because you've been cooking, you could be, you know, running around, you know. I feel like we have to normalize what our life is. And I think on social media, I think not until we kind of portray that out, nobody's going to realize what that is. And we're not going to have that change. And especially for the younger kids who are getting into it, like you must see for dancing as well, you showing, you know, you're dancing and you've got clothes on that, like, you know, are a bit more respectful, like, you know, like what people would find.
Yeah.
Be like, okay, like dancing isn't too bad. Like, you know, you come
literally,
on, you know, kids, when we see music videos and they're like half naked, we're like, okay. And that's what Asians are like, well,
literally 100%. And you touch upon a really great point there, because like, I know this is about the modeling industry, but I feel like dancing kind of adds into that, because I know so in social media some of the models that are doing bridal modeling, they do a bit of some dances, and I specifically designed my outfits for the company to be modest, because I didn't want to sexualize and objectify the girls dancing, and I wanted people to see dancing as an art. And unfortunately I had to do that through being very careful with how the outfits were designed. And yes, sometimes I will wear certain clothes to kind of cater to certain songs, but then I'll wear a baggy t-shirt with leggings because when I'm doing a Bollywood dance, because that's what dancing is about. Dancing is about having fun, and it's about there's nothing, I don't think personally there's anything sexual about it until somebody connotates it with that. So that's that. But what you were talking about in terms of looking normal, one thing I like about social media and Instagram in particular, even though I do have my love-hate relationship with Instagram, is they will start off, the influencer will start off with no makeup at all, and she'll show her skin for what it truly is. And, you know, some of them will actually show the acne, the facial hair, what they have on their face, you know, everything. And then they'll do the transition of how they got ready and then the final look. And I love that because it kind of makes it more personable and relatable to the person viewing that content, rather than being on an Asiana magazine, which I'm not saying they do Photoshop, but let's get real. Okay. So, you know, they'll Photoshop stuff, make the woman look a lot more AI looking in a way, you know. So I that's the part of social media that I do like, and I think it's provided equal opportunities in my opinion. So like, there's people that I don't know, influencers like Gonaz and influencers like many others that started doing makeup and modeling just for themselves on Instagram and now are working for big organizations like MAC, which I think are incredible. So I think it's really set the tone to make modeling in particular, not just for British Muslim women or British Asian Muslim women, more accessible to everybody.
Yeah, no, I agree. Sorry about it, cough.
Right.
No, I definitely agree. I think normalizing things, like you said, on social media is a big impact. And I have a 14-year-old sister, so I know that I don't want to show her just the fancy glam life of being a model. I want to to show her and her friends who follow me that actually you can still do modeling, do dancing, do what you want to have the passion of doing, but also have a normal career, have a normal life. It's not just about looking pretty all the time. You can still have your normal features, you can have your bad days, you know, you can dress how you want to. Because I feel like there's so much pressure on not just us, but I think on the younger generation. I feel like they look up to us, and when they see us doing certain things, they're kind of like, oh, that's fine, I'll do the same thing. And then I feel like that's kind of like what we show. So like, you know, showing designer things, I feel like I try to do less of that, because I feel like there's so many, I mean, we all are middle class working people. We all work.
I hate that. Yeah.
I feel like when the younger kids see that, they're just like, yeah, I want to have that designer bag and I want to have that. And I've got a younger sister, like I said, so I don't want her to be like, yeah, my sister is getting it, so I want to get the same thing. I want her to be like, actually, no, my dad works hard for his money. You know, my mom does, you know, my sister does. And, you know, I want to have normal things. And I think we need to kind of, like I said, we need to have that responsibility to show younger children or the wider audience that actually we live a normal life, and it takes so much more in what we do. Like you said, for your dancing, it's so much more than just dancing. It is an art. You plan, you get people together, you know, the sponsors, the location, the venues, the people, you know, scripting everything. There's so much more hard work that goes into it, and what we show on social media will kind of show also what kind of it entails to be in that career. And I think that's so important, because I mean, like you said, video dancing, people can just be like, okay, yeah, so she just probably just put recording herself and just did a dance for like 5 minutes. She's like, no,
you there's so much work that goes behind it. Yeah, for sure. And like with me in particular, I try and post things on the School of Bollywood page where people aren't exactly getting the dance 100% right, you know, otherwise we wouldn't be Sheffield's Emphasis School of Bollywood. You know, it's not going to be great. There is this constant pressure on Instagram in the modeling industry, but also in the dancing industry, where you have to post the best content ever. And then you're constantly looking for that dopamine through likes. And it's so tiring. And I think that's the worry that I have for the younger generation, because I don't, and that's why I'm really glad that there's people like you on Instagram, where you're encouraging younger people to see the realism behind Instagram and the hard work that it takes to get somewhere, and it just doesn't happen by the click of your fingers. And I think it's really important to have that kind of content out there, because it's more relatable and it makes the goals that some of the younger generation may have more in reach. They won't feel like it's completely out of reach. And one thing I did want to say though is, I remember when I was I think getting ready or something for one of the shoots, and it was for the avant-garde shoot actually, and I heard the woman whisper underneath, because with me, I'm a size 6 dress, but I think with model you have to be like for this particular shoot you have to be like a size 4 or something, you know, basically you shouldn't eat. I heard her under her breath, and she was like, is she gonna fit into that? Oh my god, is she gonna fit? Is it gonna fit? Or do you not think she's a bit like round the thighs? And I thought to myself, oh, I'm really glad that we've got this digitalized world, because we perhaps won't hear comments like that. But then you have your trolls. You know, you have your trolls on Instagram. And that's what I want to touch upon. So in terms of you, and I'm sure being a model, people just think, oh, it's just fine, dandy. You know, you're just going to be modeling and no one's going to say anything. And then you've got that whole Instagram comment page. And someone who is jealous or insecure is having a bad day with their own life wants to make your life a living hell. How have you handled that?
So I think there's so many things. Like, I think with trolls, they literally pick at anything and everything.
Literally.
I've had so much love and support from everyone on social media, but I think there has been some cases where and I think this is where it becomes very hard and it pressures people, and that's why I try to normalize things, because, like, you know, you're a normal person, your weight is going to go up and down, unless you're like really strict on everything that you want to do. I've had times where people are like, oh, her face looks chubby, so she's probably gone fat. But actually, sometimes my face puts on the weight compared to my body. So like, and what, but I don't want to justify myself, but people think that I have to reply to them to justify myself. And I think it's very hard, like, you know, and again, like, it's not nice that women do that to other women. Like, there is obviously, of course, men and stuff, but I feel like because of the platform that I'm in, there is a lot of women in the audience anyway. And I feel like they're the ones who kind of target each other, and they're the ones who pick at you to say, you know, you look a certain way or you're doing things a certain way. And it's hard to ignore that. It's very hard to ignore that. I mean, it affects all of us. But I think we've got to kind of just look past that a little bit and kind of look at all the people who actually do support us and do actually accept the normalization that we're doing. So me posting my face a little bit chubby, and what, like, other people appreciate that? And if these trolls pick on me and they've got no display picture or no pictures, I mean, who are they really to judge, you know? Like, that's how I kind of see it in my head. And I think I kind of take it as like as an amusement, because I'm kind of like, you're judging me, but you've got no picture of you. Like,
I mean, most likely the person that's judging you has got a fake account with your picture as their profile picture. So let's get real. But, you know, I'm not an influencer like you, Nimra. And I remember getting my first, and I think my only, and I hope it'll be my only troll comment. I doubt it will, but we'll see. And it was, they were like, you're such an attention seeking hog.
Oh, God.
And I wasn't, this was like a couple of years ago, and I wasn't as, let's say, as therapized and self-assured as I am now. So I looked at that comment and I thought, and I internalized it, and I thought, oh my God, am I attention seeking? Should I be doing this dancing thing? Are people just thinking I'm doing it for attention? I just enjoy it. I enjoy doing this. And I went through a whole spiral of emotions to a point where I actually had to speak to my mum about it. And then that's when she kind of grounded me a little bit and said, there are people out there that are not going to like what you're doing, and there are people out there who are, but that shouldn't stop you, derail you from achieving or doing what you want to do. If you're doing something and it's not hurting anyone and you're enjoying yourself, then you should just keep doing it and just stay focused in what you're doing. So what my question is to you, in my long-winded way, when it comes to you and modeling, especially on these social media platforms, and you're getting these troll comments, how do you deal with it emotionally? And in that area, what advice would you give to people who are essentially pursuing the similar thing and going through a similar thing?
I think the truth of it all is that people are going to be unhappy regardless. People are going to comment regardless of what you do, even if it's a positive thing, even if you're donating to charity, people will complain. So regardless of what you do, there's always going to be somebody coming at you, especially when you're on a social media platform. There's always going to be somebody. You can't keep everybody happy. It does impact you emotionally, but I think what you're really going to do is just step back and just be like, should I let these people get back to me? How much of a percentage of people are trolling on me compared to how many people are appreciating what I do and appreciating the work, the time I put into the content or the work that I do? And I think it is hard. Like, I know I'm making it sound like it's probably easy. It is hard to kind of, you know, kind of think of that and get to that place. But I think that is what we're going to do, is just step back and think, actually, but how many people actually appreciate what I do to the amount of people that are trolling me? Because like you said, you had that one comment. There may be other opportunities. I mean, it's social media. There's so many people out there. Fuck is the worst, let's be honest. But, you know, you've got to think about all the positive stuff that you're doing, the work that you're doing, like you said, trying to show that dance is an art. It's not just what you see on social media. So if that is your aim, you've got to stick to that and focus on that. Don't let anybody put you down, because really, when it comes to it, if you were doing amazing, that's when those trolls will probably comment back on you and be like, we knew it, Shaz, you can do it. So, you know, you can never trust these
literally people. Yeah, and I think and just to echo what you're saying, if you live your life through the opinions of other people, your path is never going to be linear. You're always going to be straddled from one end to the other, one end to the other. And your mind is constantly going to be occupied with other people's opinions, which will naturally bring your vibration down, which is why I always think you should stay focused, stay within your own lane. People are very welcome to pass their own opinions, but that doesn't mean it's necessarily one, the truth, and that it should impact you in any negative way. And that's one thing that I've had to learn along the way, because me being a Muslim Bollywood dancer, oh my goodness, the stigma behind that. But I still get it now and then, like when I go to places, oh, Khan, Shaz Khan, oh, Muslim. I'm like, yeah. I know. It's crazy. And it does, you know, it's got to a point now where I'm used to it and you become very Teflon coated. But one thing I did want to ask you is, when it comes to troll comments or anything in that particular, you know, you being a Muslim in particular in the modeling industry, has anyone said to you like, oh, this is haram? Or has anyone said to you that you shouldn't be doing this? And you post about, you know, you post about your religion, but then why are you doing this? I just kind of want to bring light on that area.
Yes. I mean, they messaged Emma as well, saying, oh, I wouldn't allow my wife to do it, and you're doing this. I mean, even what I
I'll
do,
give over
your partner, because they start messaging him to be like, oh, you shouldn't let your wife do this and you shouldn't do this. And I think that it is so bad that people
I mean, what happened to lower your gaze? Like, literally.
Like, don't watch me then. No, why are you looking on my page? Like, and the fact that they went out of their way to kind of go onto my page and look at my stuff and then message my own husband.
That's crazy. Saying,
this is what you need to do. Like, why? And I think
I'm really interested to hear what Ahmed's response was.
Emma literally just looks at the comment and he's like, forget him. Like, just
I can imagine him there with a cup of tea just laughing at the comments.
Like, we do that sometimes just because we're just like, how do people think that it's okay to do that? And I think having a big support system around you is so, so essential. Like, being on a platform, being out there as a company, I think it's so, so important to have a good support system, because I know I'm probably similar to you as well. Like, comments and things that people say can affect you, and it does, like, kind of bring you down. But I feel like Emma, there's been such a good support system for me, where he's been like, it's fine, like, don't worry about this, this looks okay, this looks like this, like, don't worry. And he kind of helps me get through it, and I think that's so important for somebody that you have close by to kind of reassure you that what you're doing is fine, and reassure you that actually you're okay, you're a good person still. Because I feel like it's so easy for us to target our own self and be like, I'm a bad person because I've just posted a picture of myself, when really you're not. And I think that is so important, that when you have that support system, that actually they're the ones who you value then, because then that kind of steps away from the trolls, because you're like, actually, Emma's right, you know, or my friend's or my mum's right.
But also, one thing I want to do is I want to validate what you just said, because, you know, I've been going through therapy for 2 years, and I find that we as Asian women in particular, we are kind of taught to, we have this people pleasing mentality, and we have this what will people say mentality that's been instilled into us from a very, very young age. Like, my mum, bless her, she's probably doing it to protect me, but she was like, she said, wear a dupatta before we go out. And it's like those kind of things. And it's like, oh, okay, yeah, because I need to stay modest and I need to care what people think. And she's doing it for my own good. And she's doing it for my own good to protect me, and she loves me. But because the people-pleasing aspect and the logakyahenge aspect we've had since we were little is quite naturally going to impact us now. And we're being quite brave. And here I am bigging myself up on my own podcast. What am I like? But what I'm trying to say is that we are brave that to even put ourselves out there, because we do have a lot of this negative self-talk since we were little in our minds. And then when we see a troll comment like that, in a way it triggers something for us without us even realizing, and that's why it impacts us. So it's good that we have our families there to support us. I also think it's important that we just let ourselves know that it's okay sometimes to feel shit about things, because it's been instilled into us from a very, very young age.
Yeah, and we're human. That's just how we feel about things, you know? Everything is going to get to us. And like you said, because it's been instilled to us from when we were young, that's kind of the trauma that we've been carrying. And that's something that we want to step away from. So I think that what you said was good, because I think that trauma that we've kind of had, I think that's what we need to kind of think about, that we don't want to pass on to the younger generation. We don't want to make them feel like, actually, you also have to think about what other people think, or be a people pleaser. I think we have to change that I know I don't want to pass that on to my sister, and I'm sure you guys don't want to pass that on to your younger cousins or your younger followers that you have, because I think that's how we're really going to change the society and kind of normalize is not being a people pleaser. Do what you want to. Ignore all the hate that you get. You know, I think we're going to really change that trauma, and that's the only way we're going to actually move on in the next couple of years of how we're going to change the whole dynamics of everything.
For sure, for sure. And I feel like, I don't know, with you being part of the modeling industry and being the person that you are, you know, you're from a South Asian background, you're British, you're Muslim, and you're female. And I think what you're doing for the younger generation is admirable, because one, you're enjoying what you're doing, but you're also paving the way for the newer generation. And we're trying to get rid of those shackles from that old fashioned mentality and trying to merge both cultures, both British and Asian cultures, into a safe yet morally bound environment. And I think it's commendable, because it's hard to find that balance, especially in an industry where money is so thrown at you, and money seems to be the overall object or the overall goal. And I think people tend to lose their sense of purpose in that environment. And it's quite sad, really, because you can't really trust the environment that you're in, or you like you said, women supporting women. Some women might not support another woman because they've just taken their deal, and money becomes the object of everything. And it's really sad. So what advice would you give to someone wanting to pursue the same dream as you?
I would say definitely stay true to yourself. I think that's the key point of everything. And also always think of other things that you can do. I mean, like, especially for the younger generation, like, they want to get into modeling and acting and dancing. That's all great, but don't just make that your only thing. And that's kind of like with anything. Don't just make one thing the only thing that you're going to do in life. Try to pursue other things, have other passions, have other hobbies, have different areas that you want to get into. And then when you get older, then you kind of know, what do you want to do more of? What do you want to kind of stick by? I think that is such a big thing. Like, people just think, yeah, I'm going to be a model and that's it. I'm going to be set for life and I'm just going to get all the jobs and I'm going to be glammed up and getting a new Merc and everything. But that's not the reality of life. You know, there's so many other things. You know, you grow up and you have a mortgage and you have other things to pay for. So I think you've got to really, really step back and look at the actual reality of who you are as an individual. How can you as an individual cope with certain things that happen financially, mentally, physically? You know, physically, are you capable of doing all those things that you need to be a model or a dancer or an actor? There is so many things that you need to keep in mind of, but you need to stay true to yourself. And I think that's the only way that you're going to remain happy for the rest of what you do. Don't sacrifice anything. Don't literally sacrifice anything, apart from if it's sleep that you have to because you're working hard, then that's great. But don't sacrifice anything else just for the sake of it. Honestly, I feel like mental health is such a big part of it, and it's so good that we kind of consider that, because, you know, I feel like if you don't enjoy what you're doing, you're just doing your 9 to 5 and doing it for the sake of the money.
Exactly, exactly. I completely agree with that. I think mental health and just your general well-being is very, very important with whatever you do, because if those two aren't intact, whatever you're going to pursue is always going to come out very weak-founded. And I think one thing I want to shine light on is, I think you're quite humble, Nira, in the sense where with modeling, there's a lot of work to it. You know, you've got to think about, you've got to study poses, you've got your stand-up poses, you've got your sit-down poses, you've got your in-the-face poses, you've got to do the sense of what we call a natak, like the drama and the kind of the look. Like, not everyone can hack it. So yes, I agree that you need to kind of work hard, but work hard in the sense where do your research, study models, study how to become a model. And we have a digitalized platform now, like YouTube and Instagram, and that, you know, people can even reach out to influencers like yourself. Maybe you should even think about setting up your own tutorial, you know, who knows, how to be a model. And I think it's really important that people see the hard work that's put in behind it. I mean, modeling wasn't for me, if I'm being perfectly honest. But for me, my passion was dancing. And so I think with me, choreography, booking the studio, coming up with different themes, making sure that some themes are more feminine, some things are more unisex. Even with choreography, there's so many things to it. And then having to focus on facial expressions and bringing the whole thing together as a performance with the outfit takes so much time. And you're doing it as a side hustle, you know, it's not even a full-time thing. And little things like, I know it sounds so miniature, but you're going to be packed with makeup every day for a different shoot. So how to look after your skin, how to maintain your hair and oil your hair, because there's hairspray and it's being combed. There's so much to it. So my little penny's worth to anyone listening is, please do your research. It's not out of your reach, but also realize that there needs to be a lot of consistency, commitment, and hard work dedicated to it. And I think that's something that you've downscaled a bit, because you becoming a big model through social media, you've also had to look at the digital marketing aspect of it. You've had to look at, how am I going to get these reels for people to look at these reels? How am I going to get noticed? What's the lighting got to be? What's the background got to be? You've studied things and you've done it subconsciously. I can tell you've done it subsciously. Maybe a little bit of Ahmed's help. I'm going to give him a little bit of credit, just a bit.
Yeah.
But you've done it subconsciously without really realizing how much work you've put in to get to where you are. So yeah, well done.
Thank you.
No, but I think we've had, honestly, I feel quite refreshed after this chat. I love having these chats. You know, just like you said, women supporting women. And I just think we should have more chats like this on all platforms. But yeah, thank you so much for coming on my podcast today. I just wanted to ask you, do you have any last words that you want to say to anyone or anything? Please do.
Not as what I've repeated already. I just want to say, stay true to yourself. Never, never let any of those trolls get to you. I mean, you work hard, you focus on your end goal, and I think everything else will smoothly run by.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Nimra, for being on this podcast, and hopefully see you soon.
Yeah, see you soon, hopefully.
Oh, I really enjoyed that chat. It's so good to be back and to dust off the microphone. I hope this episode has provided you with some inspiration to pursue your dreams, no matter how out of reach they may feel. If you've been affected by any of the topics discussed today, please don't hesitate to contact me at BamsWithShaz on Instagram. Bye for now!